Hey, welcome to the VBAC Link. Thank you so much for being here with us today. We are truly so grateful for this community and all the support in listening to the show. Before we get started, I wanted to plug in another amazing show that you should go back and listen to if you haven't yet. It is episode 406, where co-founder of Needed, Julie, and I talk more about health, especially during our conception years. We talk more on choline and how important it is, yet how often it is being missed completely. In fact, most prenatal vitamins that you find in the store shelves contain either zero choline or barely any at all. And getting enough from food alone can be difficult. It would take at least 3 to 4 eggs a day to meet the adequate intake of choline. And new research is pointing to the fact that moms may need almost double that amount for optimal outcomes. In this episode, Julie mentions about 95% of moms are not meeting their choline needs. Choline supports babies' neural tube formation and cognitive development, and as well as mothers' healthy metabolism and mood. So getting enough is key. If you are among so many of us who are not getting enough, I highly suggest checking out Needed's Prenatal Choline. You can get 20% off your first order with code VBAC. That is VBAC at thisisneeded.com. Don't forget to go back after this episode and listen to 406 to learn even more information on choline. All right, let's dive in. Hello, Women of Strength. It's Megan, and I'm excited to talk to you today a little bit about Chloe. Chloe is a mama who has quite the journeys through all of her births. She had 2 C-sections and then did go on to have a vaginal birth. So be back after 2C. And, you know, as you're listening to her story, I just want you to keep in mind some of the red flags, honestly, that went along the way. And we talked about this a little bit, like we don't know what we don't know. And I was in this situation where I had some red flags. And people were telling me things, and I took the information that I had in the moment and made the decisions that were best for me in the moment. But looking back, just like Chloe, realized, oh, maybe that wasn't really necessary. Through Chloe's journey, she had a anterior placenta, and there was concern that it might be placenta previa. And today in the show notes, we're going to have a placenta previa blog. So if you're wanting to learn more about what placenta previa is, definitely check out our blog. It's in the show notes. But they were kind of having some concerns. And this provider said, you know, well, you've got this going on and there's no way that your baby can come out or down. Like it will not come down. And when she said that, I was just like, what? It's so crazy to always hear random things and random reasons why providers are telling people that they can't have a vaginal birth. And this is a new one for me. I have never heard an anterior placenta being told the reason why a baby would never come down or out. So obviously, if we've got placenta previa or placenta accreta, you know, placenta issues, yes, that can have an effect on the way we give birth. But this was really interesting. And they talked about the suspicion of CPD. And so that's another thing. CPD is just, and she'll say this even, she feels like it's thrown out kind of willy-nilly. And it really is. So many people are being told they have a pelvis that is too small. So should this provider say like, no, actually, you cannot have a third or a baby vaginally for your third. Like we really need you to have a C-section. We think you should have a C-section because we have a very high suspicion of your pelvis being too small, which she will prove that case to be super wrong. And I'm not going to give that away because she will share it in the story. But it just reminded me today that it is so important to dive in deep. And I think that's another reason why I have started really suggesting this podcast to first-time moms, because well, a lot of us were first-time moms and we didn't know. We were told things, and again, with what we were told, and that's pretty common. And so if you have a first-time mom that you know is preparing to give birth, share this podcast with them, because I really believe that through these stories, they are going to be learning so much. And again, we need to reduce the cesarean rate. The cesarean rate is astronomically high. I just
I don't know what to say about it other than it needs to change. And I think that can help with learning our options really from the very first birth and learning how to avoid unnecessary cesareans like myself and Chloe's situation. Now, again, we had them and we love our babies and our experiences are what they are, and they have helped us grow today to who we are today and to share our VBAC after two cesarean stories. I also don't want to diss on cesareans. Like, there's a purpose for cesareans and there's also a desire. And so if you are someone who desires a cesarean, I just want you to know you're incredible and it doesn't make you any less for having a cesarean, but let's try to dive in and reduce the chances of a cesarean that may be unnecessary or undesired and or undesired. So I'm not going to take too much time left because I want to get to Chloe. So we'll jump into the intro and then have Chloe share her stories. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. All right, cute Chloe. I am seriously so tickled that you're here with us today and your baby's here. So, everybody, we might have a little baby in the background. How old is your baby now?
She's coming up on a year.
A year. Oh my goodness. Oh. And this is your
Yes,
VBAC baby.
yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, we're excited to have you and be sharing more of your VBAC after two C-section stories. So VBA2C for anyone who is new to the podcast or new to the VBAC world. If you hear us say VBA2C, that means vaginal birth after two C-section. So she has got her story. So I'm going to turn the time over to you, Chloe, to start your C-section journey.
Okay, thanks. Yes, I have just texted my husband to come grab the baby because she's so yeah, I'll just give a quick like recap of so I live in Canada. I'm out in British Columbia. So but I was born in Alberta, which is like the next province over. We have like a very, very high C-section rate here too, specifically where I live. I mean, in our province alone, I think it's up to 40%. And I know a lot of the hospitals in the greater
Wow.
province I am, it's like 44 to 49%.
Wow. Why do
Yes.
you think that? Like, what's the culture like? Are they just kind of anti-vaginal birth, or are they more like scheduled induction, ghost? Like, what do you think that, why it's that high?
I'm just trying to think exactly why. I mean, I feel like people are just. I mean, my own experience, it seems a lot of there's a lot of fear mongering when it comes to, you know. I mean, I didn't get a lot of it with my first pregnancy. It was kind of just at the end, but definitely when I went for my VBAC with my son, my second pregnancy, it was, yeah, it's just a lot of fear mongering. And I'm not really sure why it's so high here because I know the next province over in Alberta where I was actually born, it isn't as high. So it's, yeah, they've just got policies and stuff that, especially after multiple C-sections. So it's, yeah, it's bad. I don't think that's good. So yeah, I was born in Alberta, and then yeah, I've basically lived out in BC here for since I was about five. And I'm just gonna get her. Sorry, I'm gonna. Yeah, he's good. Can you hear me? Yeah, so I guess I'll just give like a recap. In 2015 or 2014, no, 2015, I got pregnant with my daughter, so my oldest. And yeah, that was a pretty, I was 25 when I was pregnant with her. It was pretty like healthy, typical pregnancy up until around 20 weeks. They saw that my placenta was partial, I had partial previa. So it was like low lying, but not completely. Not even really covering it, but just like lower towards it. So it was, you know, they were pretty optimistic that it would move. In most cases, it would move. And from all the research I did, that by the end, it should have like pulled itself up and not be an issue. And so I just kind of, you know, there wasn't a lot of push or talk about C-section at that point. But yeah, so I sort of just, you know, carried on with that pregnancy. I think I had some bleeding and some spotting, and I would have to go to the hospital every time. And you know, again, it was all kind of talk that, you know, this shouldn't, it should move, it should move. And then I'm just trying to think. So I didn't have a lot of knowledge of physiological birth at the time. I was 25, and I just kind of thought, oh, you know, I'll just go into labor, my water will break, and I'll go to the hospital, and I'll probably have an epidural, and, you know, and that will be that. I didn't really do a lot of research. My oldest daughter, I have her share her with my ex-husband. So at the time, my ex-husband and I, we did do, like, I think around 25 to 32 weeks, we did, like, a prenatal class, which I actually found pretty good. And I remember the lady running it was very informative and very, you know, very about physiological birth. So she did give a little bit of knowledge of that. And I found, you know, she there was this one day, because it was a 6-week course. So each week we would go in for like 2 hours and with a group of other expecting parents. And you know, they'd have a different topic each day. And there was one day where they did a C-section and she went, you know, she was very, I could tell she was very, you know, kind of, they'll kind of push C-sections. Like a lot of you probably will end up in a C-section, not because it's necessary, but it's just, we have such a high C-section rate. I could sort of, looking back now, I think she was sort of hinting at that, but she also said that like, and she really reminded us that in a true emergency, you know, you will need to be put under, you will like, most of the time it's not going to be, when you go in for a C-section, if they have time to do a spinal or, you know, get the epidural in, it's not like emergent. A true emergency, they're going to need to put you under quick. And so she is sort of explaining that if you need a C-section and they're, you know, doing that, not to worry and stuff. So, and I found her like talking about the stages of labor. That was really good. But yeah, so we did that. I think we did a hospital tour too, which I found was very just kind of policy type stuff. So I didn't really get much out of that one. But so it was kind of up in the air about whether or not I'd have a C-section. And then around sort of towards the end of my pregnancy, around 38 weeks, I went in for, it's 38, 39 weeks. I went in for just a checkup, but I was at the hospital. I can't remember exactly the reason that brought me there, but we went in and the OB did a check and he said, well, before that, I had actually had an ultrasound and they had confirmed, oh, your placenta's moved just enough, like the 2 centimeters or whatever it's required to move for it to be safe to try for a vaginal birth. So I was like, oh, yay, like we're all good to go, right? And so then when I went to the OB, he checked and he just said, oh, yeah, your baby can't drop down. They're very high up and you're completely closed. And he tried to say like the placenta is like preventing her from dropping down, like it was pushing her out of the way, which, looking back, just doesn't even really make any sense. Like, isn't it like soft? Like, aren't they next to it regardless? Like, you know, it didn't make sense, kind of the reason. But I was young. like, I can understand if it was fully covering it, but it was to the side, enough out of the way, the 2 centimeters. Mm-hmm. But he was saying it was blocking her somehow. It just kind of, looking back, I think it was just sort of a you know,
fear-mongering. Yeah, doesn't make really sense, but they're trying to make it make sense type of situation. Yeah.
So I was like, you know, I said, oh, I recommend, there was no nothing else, like we're going straight to a C-section, we're not recommending any kind of induction or anything, we're just gonna, she can't get out, so we're gonna do a C-section. And I just, you know, and it wasn't an urgent one, we did it like 3 days later. So I was about 39 and 4 days, and I had her by C-section. And you know, it wasn't an awful experience. We definitely, I think I got a bit of skin to skin in the OR. I remember getting really sick from the medication and just, you're like, my hands were tied too. I remember not liking that. And I just felt like I was going to puke. And so they're, you know, got her on me and I'm just like, I don't, like, this is not, you know, I'm going to throw up. And then they took her away and sort of like gagging. It was, you know, it wasn't awful, but it wasn't great is kind of the way I would describe it. And I healed pretty good. Like, I didn't have any issues healing. I think I struggled to nurse, but I think that was also lack of knowledge. I had no idea what I was doing. I just thought nursing would come naturally, and you would just, I didn't know that when they cry all the time, that's like they can nurse like constantly and that's normal. But to me at the time, I was like, well, I just nursed her an hour ago. She's fine. She's like, she shouldn't need any more milk. And then, so 6 weeks on, we were formula, and I remember being a little bit like hard on myself for that too. So yeah, healed pretty, I've got notes here, so I'm just making sure I cover everything. I think around 4 to 6 months is kind of when I started to really struggle with it. It didn't hit me right away, but it was like 4 to 6 months I started to have really negative feelings associated with the C-section, and not any kind of like PTSD or anything, but just very, there were other people around me that were having kids and they were having their, you know, like vaginal birth, like no problem, seemed to go fine for them. And I started to just get kind of like a very jealous, just angry sort of feeling, right? And so that sort of went on for like, I hadn't even heard of the term VBAC until I went to the 6 week post-op or post checkup appointment for that one. And the doctor mentioned that I would be a great candidate because it was a previa related C-section, that he'd be a good candidate for a VBAC next time. And at that point, like, I think that was one of the first times I'd even heard that term. I didn't know once you had a C-section, it's always a C-section, but I also didn't really know what a VBAC was. So from then on, I started to do like a lot of research and joined some Facebook groups and kind of just learned about sort of the medical community and all this push when it comes to C-sections and, you know, medicalization of birth and all that. So I got sort of passionate about it, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna have a VBAC next time. And then in that time frame, so, you know, around when my daughter was about 2.5, my ex-husband and I separated, and that was like a rough year and a half, 2 years. I ended up having to go to a treatment center with my daughter, like had a mom's program, and you know, been sober since around that time, but just went through a hard time. That was kind of like a hard patch. And when I was in treatment, I had just started a new relationship with my now husband. And I, you know, we were about 6 months in, and when I went to treatment, I found out I was pregnant, my son. And so, yeah, that pregnancy, you know, started off kind of interesting, just, you know, but it was good. Like we were excited. And once I got out of treatment, it was, you know, good to, you know, be back in the swing of things. And so, yeah, that pregnancy was pretty much, you know, normal and good. And I was pretty like determined right from the start of that pregnancy that I'm like, I'm going to have a VBAC. This is going to be my VBAC baby. I was pretty like, but I also thought that it would just kind of happen. I thought your chances are so high with getting a VBAC, you know, if you try, right, that I'm like, this is going to happen. Right. So I did a bit of prep for sure. You know, I stayed in all the Facebook groups. I didn't listen to any podcasts. I didn't really learn about physiological birth. I think the main things were like sort of watching Facebook posts, and like I got red raspberry leaf tea and I bounced on my ball, but I think I only bounced on my ball at the end like a couple times. My husband's just like, that was kind of a waste of money. Like, you bounced on it for 2 times and then like, I'm like, well, yeah, I don't know. I just thought sort of the same thinking. I was sort of in the same mindset that it would just happen, right? Like, this has got to happen, because the last time it was to do with previa, and I don't, at 20 weeks this time, I found out that was not an issue. Placenta was exactly where it should be. And so, yeah, I just kind of, you know, went along with that pregnancy. And that pregnancy also, I had gained quite a bit of weight. With my daughter, my oldest, I think I gained around 40 pounds and I was heavier to begin with. With my son, I was quite thin when I got pregnant with him because of the year and 2 years before that was not easy on me, but I gained about 75 pounds with him. By 30 weeks, I was like up 50 pounds. And I remember just being very just tired and like already done. At 30 weeks, I was done. I was just like, oh, I can't even imagine like another 12 weeks of this. Like, it was, because I was confident I was going to go overdue. I just had a feeling that I was going to go past my due date. My mom was like 2 weeks overdue with both me and my brother. So even though I had a scheduled C-section at 39 for my daughter, I knew if I let myself go, I was like, I'm going to go overdue. I don't think I'm going to be someone that's going to go early. So yeah, we were planning we made the decision I wanted to try for a home birth. And I had midwives this time with my daughter. I was with just like maternity clinic and just, you know, doctors and the OBs. So this time we had a midwife. We hired a doula. So that was one that like that was I did do stuff to try to, you know, I just don't think I put as much physical prep into this pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we hired our doula and then my due date came and went. And I remember at like 41 weeks, I think I went in for a sweep. They tried to do the sweep, but it was really painful. And she's like, you're not open at all. So I can barely get a fingertip. I could kind of do like a half sweep or something. And I remember just being very down at that point because I was just so, you know, done. I had been done for months at that point. So the midwife kind of said, are you sure you want to keep trying for a VBAC? And like, when she said that, my heart sank. I felt immediate like, okay, they've lost hope in this situation. So I was already like, oh, okay. Well, yeah, I still do, but now I'm like, am I not being supported? And then they gave me a sheet about, you know, once you go past your due date, the chance of the VBAC goes down and all this, and the chance of SIDS or stillbirth goes up. And I remember just being very like, kind of, I think that's kind of that moment sort of already, I started to kind of go downhill with it, like thinking this could happen. I was very like, this is gonna happen. And then at that point I started to have doubts.
Taking a quick break to share more about digestive enzymes. For years, I have had digestive issues. I was told to take a digestive enzyme, and so I went on Amazon, checked out a few products with honestly great reviews, and quickly bought one. I figured they couldn't all be different, right? Well, similar to other supplements like prenatal vitamins, I have learned after starting Needed's digestive enzymes that they are not all alike. My belly has had issues for years, so I decided to get into the doctor and get down to the bottom of things. The doctor asked me to bring all my supplements in, and she wanted to review everything and told me to throw out some things, but when it came to anything that I brought from Needed supplements, she said, hold on to these and keep up with them. She was so direct. I said, okay. So I threw out the old digestive enzymes and continued taking Needed's. You guys, I really wish I could explain the difference I have experienced in taking these digestive enzymes versus the others. It's truly so cool to see. The bloat, digestive noise, my gas, yes, I'm talking about gas, has truly improved. I can't thank Needed enough for creating such a high quality digestive enzyme that helps me get radically better digestion. No matter what state of life you are in, you can likely benefit from taking digestive enzymes. Grab your bottle today and get 20% off with code VBAC. Visit thisisneeded.com and get 20% off with code VBAC. Okay, let's get back into today's show.
So yeah, so the midwife at that same appointment, she suggested, well, why don't we try a Foley, like we'll get you in to see the OB at the hospital and we'll try a Foley catheter and then we can still attempt your home birth. And I think I went in like, that was Saturday or something. I think I went in on the Monday to see the OB and it was the same hospital as before. I'm pretty sure it was the same room that I was, you know, examined when I was pregnant with my daughter. And they're like, yeah, it's going to be a C-section because of this. Same room, same table I'm lying on, and they're just, you know, this OB comes in, checks me and says, oh, you're completely closed, baby's still really high up, not dropping down, I'm not able to get a catheter in, like I would not be able to fit this in. So I was 41 in 2 days or something at that point, 41 and two. So she's like, yeah, you're not good, this isn't gonna happen. So no other talk of any kind of induction, just I recommend a C-section. And at that point, I'm just bawling and, you know, like this, it's over. And I think Matt's like, my husband, he's like calling my dad and my dad puts the phone on. My dad's like, you just got to do what you got to do. And like, everyone's trying to like, okay. So I came around to the idea, like this just has to be a C-section. But again, it's just the reason just didn't, I knew in the back of my mind that, and all the stuff the research I had done, that this was not, this wasn't a reason to do a C-section, to jump to surgery. Like there was no medical indication. My son wasn't in distress. nothing was going on with him. Nothing was going on with me. It was just, oh, you're past your due date. You're 40, you're over 41 weeks and the baby is high up and no, showing no signs of coming. And your chances of having a VBAC are now going down. So it just felt, and I just kind of, you know, I wished hard after I had fought, like been like, nope, I'm just going to go home and wait. I wish I'd done that. But, you know, I was just kind of wrapped in their, they're in charge. I had that mentality of, well, they're running the show, so I have to do what they say, right? Which is so not true. And then, yeah.
We think it is. We feel that it is. It just, what they're saying, sometimes it does. It just is like, I have to do that. I don't have options.
Yeah. Yeah. It just felt like, so what happens if I say no? Is this, are we, you know, is that, mm-hmm. do I not have support, right? But I know that's not the case now. Like, if I said no right. and, you know, and I came to the hospital in labor, it's not like they would deny me care. I know that, but so, yeah. So it was recommended I have a C-section and agreed to one, I think like the next or in the next couple of days or no, it was the next day I had it. And yeah, my midwife actually had surgical assist. So she got to actually assist in the C-section, which was kind of cool. Yeah. So I remember too, I was like waiting for that C-section to start. And I had mentioned that maybe next time, like we weren't even sure if we were going to have another child. But I said, well, maybe next time I can try. I've seen people go for a VBAC after multiple C-section. And then one of the midwives had heard me and went and told the main midwife. And then she came in and she said, you know, we're overheard talking about, you know, trying again next time. And we just want to say that we highly recommend if you have any more children that we strongly recommend that you just continue to have C-sections. Because we have a strong suspicion that you have CPD or whatever
condition is. Pelvic disproportion. Yeah, it's like your pelvis is too small, which is really interesting. Yes, they may have seen it inside a cesarean, but I don't know. Hashtag eye roll.
I like 100% eye roll to it now because I'm just, you know, and it's not true. It's just, it wasn't true. But it, yeah, so she's like, we think you have this and, you know, we wouldn't suggest trying to, you know, I feel like it's a very loosely tossed out diagnosis. I think it's quite rare too. So yeah, I had the C-section and all went well. They didn't strap my arms down. I think I was very like specific that I wanted a gentle C-section and no arms strapped down. Yeah, all of that. And then I got to do like nursing with my son in the OR. And I'm very grateful that our area too is very accommodating of gentle C-sections. I mean, because the C-sections are so high, I would hope that they're at least doing that, and they are. So grateful for that. Recovery seemed okay. That was 2020 that I had him. So COVID, we were in the hospital, and then literally, like, we had visitors come in, and then, like, days after we got home, quarantine happened. So it was, like, we were right before everything kind of shut down. So, yeah, so, like, the pandemic on top of all that. But, yeah, and it was all good. But then at 10 weeks postpartum, I had a really bad hemorrhage. Never experienced that before. Woke up in the middle of the night to, like, I just woke up to gushing blood all over the bed. I kind of got on the floor and was like squatting, but not sure what, like, I was just in shock because it was coming out. Like, this is not even a heavy period. This is something else. I realized quickly, like, oh, this is what's going on. So I ran to the bathroom, sat on the toilet, and it's just like, I'm just gushing blood. And called my husband. He came over and he grabs the baby off the bed and he's like, what? I'm like, I called the midwife. I was out of their care at that point, but I called them and it was like their hotline. They're like, hang up and call 911. And so ambulance came, took me, you know, it's horrible being in the hospital during that time. I couldn't have anyone. I forgot my phone, forgot everything. Wasn't even wearing pants. Like, it was just such a, you know, urgent situation. And so, yeah, they called the OB that delivered my son. And I remember being like in the hospital bed, really, like I was heavily bleeding all over it and I was cramping and I think I was passing all kinds of clots and it was just, I was alone, I was like puking all over myself. And so, yeah, they called the OB in. At that point I had like started to go off, like drift off. And when I woke up, they were hooking up blood and giving me a transfusion. And then, I could swear I could have heard the nurses being, we're losing her, we're losing her. It was very scary. Like, I was traumatized after that. So they did, you know, an emergency DNC, but they're having me sign all this paperwork that we may have to take your uterus, like all this. you know, if we can't stop the bleeding. So I'm signing all the stuff alone and just like, you know, I guess do what you got to do. I just want to get back to my baby, right? But so they did that and it was successful. I remember like feeling down because I was worried they were going to have to actually reopen my incision. As soon as I felt down, before even anyone came to talk to me, I was like, okay, they didn't have to open me up. I think everything went good. And everything went good. And they transferred me to like a bigger hospital to, you know, just monitor me. And then my husband and my son were able to come and like join me, and we spent a couple nights there and they monitored me and everything was fine. From that point on, I recovered fine, but I was very like, had a lot of negative feelings, especially after that one. And They said the cause of the bleeding was most likely like they'd left a piece of something, like it hadn't been completely cleaned out,
like leftover remains of placenta.
Yeah, like afterbirth or placenta or something. I did go for an ultrasound around 8 weeks because I had been spotting and it would get heavier here and there continuously for those 10 weeks. But I was like, so they're like, oh yeah, this is a little bit more than normal. So they sent me for an ultrasound, but it didn't show anything up. And they said maybe the ultrasound was rushed because COVID was going on and all that. But so, yeah, so I recovered fine from that other than that. And then, you know, went on to recover fine. But then again, like 4 or 6 months, maybe even a little sooner, especially with the hemorrhage, I started to have the very negative like feelings about it. Really kind of angry towards the midwives and doctors. And, you know, I just felt like it was a bad experience and like just especially that hemorrhage. But yeah, so I started seeing a counselor. Like my husband and I moved, and we moved to a different area about 45 minutes away. And then I still like really struggled with like very negative kind of feelings around all of this, you know, like fail, like I hate to use that word, but just felt like I failed. And, you know, I was just very negative about it all. But I started seeing a counselor in 2022, which like helped, you know, just helped me sort of process all of it. And then so fast forward that like 2.5 years later, which is still, yeah, 2022 summer, we decided to start trying one to have one more. I have one with my ex-husband, and then me and my husband now wanted to have two, you know, of our own, even though he considers my daughter like his daughter too. But so we just tried for our last one, and it took a little bit longer than we were expecting, which it wasn't like crazy long, but I think about 10 months. And we had a very early loss in like December of 2022. Yeah. So in the midst of all this, I was having some really painful periods and like some really weird, like stabbing pains. So they were doing like ultrasounds and they found out that I had a bit of endometriosis and that there was an endometrioma like on one of my ovaries, and that maybe like my tubes might've been a little blocked and that's why we were struggling or why we had the loss or whatever. But so I had a laparoscopic procedure in January of 2023 just to get rid of the cysts and like clear out, like just kind of do a, I guess a DNC, like clear everything out and like run a dye through my tubes to see how open they were and all that. And everything was good. And he like said everything looked good. And then like 3 months later, literally three cycles or so, we got pregnant with my youngest. And yeah, so this pregnancy, I was like determined, like I was like, this is happening and I'm going to really put in a lot of work. Like I was very, you know, and I started looking for providers, and that's kind of where it was started to become a struggle. Everyone in the valley, most of the places, like we live rural, so we're about 45 minutes from each hospital. So the one hospital that's like newer and like a level, I don't know what the top trauma, but the top one is Abbotsford Hospital, and they have a policy apparently that just flat out was like no VBACs after multiple C-sections. So any of the doctors or midwives that are delivering there, it was like a no-go. I got rejected by quite a few, even Chilliwack, which is the other direction. I have heard that people can go there for VBAC after multiple C-section, but I was finding a lot of the practices were rejecting me. They were saying that it was because the OB that they had that did do, like that was okay with VBAC after multiple C-sections was like retiring or leaving the hospital. So they were like no longer had an OB that was okay with that. So anyways, it became this, you know, I went to my family doctor to try to get into BC Women's, which is about 2 hours away. It's like in Vancouver. and they definitely support it. They're just more set up for definitely doing those. So I thought that was going to be my only option, but then it was like, you have to have an address and all this stuff. So I was like, maybe we could use my husband's aunt lives in Vancouver. Maybe we'll just use their address or whatever. But I was trying to find anyway. But then I had reached out to a couple of doulas on Instagram, and I asked if she knew of any providers, and she said, because I said, oh, I've been told that there's a policy in Fraser Valley that you can't VBAC after multiple C-section. Like the Fraser Health has a policy. And she's like, that's ridiculous, like super angry about it. And let me put a post out. So she put a post out saying, you know, kind of going off about the policy, but then also, is there any recommendation? Like, does anyone know of any providers in the area that do C-section after, or VBAC after multiple C-section? And there was quite a few people that were recommending, who ended up being my midwife. Her name's Winifred, and she's at Family First in Chilliwack. So the hospital that they said their OB was leaving. So anyways, I reached out to her and or that practice, and I was still kind of on the fence. Like, I thought I was going to have to go to the big hospital in the city in Vancouver, BC Women's, but I started having like phone appointments with her. And when I kind of knew that the BC Women's wasn't going to happen, I just sort of was like, okay, I'm going to have to make this work. And, you know, she's only one, there's only one of her, like, she's just like the main midwife in the practice. It's the other midwife practice I was with my son. There were about like six of them. So with this one, it was just her, and she had like an associate midwife who had her own practice that kind of covered her in case she couldn't make it. But like, most likely this midwife would be the one at your birth. So in the beginning, I was kind of finding like my appointments where it would get like sort of pushed or rescheduled, but it's because she was the only midwife. So obviously a birth or something like that is going to take precedent over, you know, a prenatal appointment. So I was kind of like on the fence because I was getting like, oh, what if this isn't the right choice? But now I'm glad looking back, because she's, you know, was so good for everyone in their birth that, yeah, sometimes these like appointments got, you know, pushed. Right. But I was so happy that I went with her. So I found her pretty early on, because midwives here book up really quickly. You have to like be on it. Like as soon as you basically get a positive pregnancy test, you need to be like finding a midwife, because they book up so fast. That was within the first trimester that I secured her. And then probably around close to the second, like end of first, second, I started listening to this podcast, and it became like a lifeline listening to this podcast. Like, it was just so, you know, I got so much knowledge and so much empowerment. And I was like telling everyone, it just gives me comfort. Like, I just get this sense of comfort whenever I listen to all these stories. Like, I could do this. And it was very therapeutic, but knowledgeable, and just all of the things. Like, I can't say enough good things about it. So yeah, so I carried on the pregnancy. The other thing I will make a note about this pregnancy, I stayed very active. With my son, I had gained a lot of weight. I lost it all, like, you know, within 6 to 9 months. Working out has been pretty much a big part of my life for the last like 8 or 9 years, except for when I went through kind of that rough patch during my separation. I sort of didn't work out really around that time, but picked it up again, like, you know, after that settled and, you know, we settled into our new home. I stayed active. I was nervous about it because I had a miscarriage, but my doctor assured me, so I kept working out, and that was all great. And I think that played a huge role in this. Didn't gain as much weight. I think the whole pregnancy I only gained about 25 pounds. So, and this pregnancy, I just felt better. Like, I felt really beautiful. I felt, you know, I had more energy. I just felt really good. So yeah, I think that all those things. Around 30 weeks, I had a consultation with the OB at the hospital. So it's almost like they don't want, at this hospital or this area, they didn't want people to know that there was an OB there. It's almost like hush hush, like untalked about, that they do these VBACs after multiple C-sections. So there was an OB there that, like, is, I would refer to him as like tolerant. Like, he's not... My experience, like, my midwife loved him and said he was great, and I can see why now in the kind of grand scheme of it all, but like, my experience with him is like, yeah, he's tolerant. Like, he's not. So it's in a consultation, he just said that he, you know, is going over all the statistics and all the rupture rates and all that, and kind of put a negative, like, on me and my husband left sort of like, I felt sort of just discouraged, right? But I knew he was going to say all that. I kind of went in prepared that this was what this was going to be like. So he said, and his actual words were, I don't, you know, you can try, but I have no confidence that you'll deliver magically, but you can prove me wrong. So it was very, I know. I told my midwife that too. And she was just like, oh yeah, like he means well. Like, and I kind of see what she's saying, but yeah, he's like, oh, very blunt. And anyways, that's kind of, you know, he's like, okay, we'll see you back at 39 weeks for, you know, we'll check you. I want you to do a growth scan at 38 weeks. I was kind of like in the appointment, like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. But like knew in my head that I was just not going to all those. Like, it's like, yeah, I'm just going to do whatever I do. I'll tell you.
You're like, I will tell you what you want just right now. So I can get out of here.
Exactly. Right. And I know I missed the growth scan. And like, I got a call from him and, you know, it's like really trying to be like scary about it. Like you really need to like, you know, be here and stuff. And like, and like just kind of fear mongering, right? And then I remember him telling me that, you know, if I go into labor, I need to be at the hospital because I only have 24 hours, like from the time that, you know, my water breaks or like labor's contractions start or whatever. And I was just like, yeah, like just really like kind of just saying yeah, but he probably couldn't stand me because I was just. But yeah, so I did I did a few things. I did a VBAC prep class that was ran by the doula that helped me find my provider. That was through My Powerful Birth. I would make big pitchers of red raspberry leaf tea and I would chill it. And then I would like mix it with like a fizzy drink. So it was like, you know, it was like a treat, but I would have a couple of them a day around like, I don't know, 30, like into the third trimester. I can't remember exactly when. My 8-year-old at the time and I would make like a big batch of chocolate dates with peanut butter and like sea salt on them. So like I was just love chocolate, right? So but I don't really like dates. So but they were good like that. They taste like little Snickers. So I would eat those, you know, a few of those a day. So I was doing all the things and doing them daily, like putting in and staying active. We were on the fence about hiring a doula because our doulas the first time we didn't have a super great experience. We felt like when it turned to C-section, they sort of brushed us aside. When I was struggling to breastfeed, you know, they came to pick up the pool and my husband ran up to give them the pool. And he's like, she's really struggling down there. And they're just like, oh, well, when's her midwife coming? Like they seemed like they lost all interest when the VBAC no longer turned.
I'm sorry.
So I was like, and we spent $1,200 on that. So we were kind of like, we decided not to hire a doula at first, but and also, like, thankfully, I actually figured out, despite them not helping me, I did figure out how to breastfeed. And I was breastfeeding my son up until I was pregnant with this one that I just had. So, yeah, I was like, I remember having the C-section with him. I'm like, I'm going to breastfeed. That's what I'm going to put my mind to. And I figured it out that time. And he nursed far longer than I expected. So, but yeah, they were like, we just kind of didn't have a great experience. So, but at the end, I was listening to this podcast and everyone's like, doula, 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 doula. I'm like, oh, I just feel like we need to have a doula. Like, I feel like this is going to be virtual. And, you know, I kind of had to convince my husband. And, you know, I think he was a lot more on board than I was expecting. He's like, yeah, I think it's probably good. Cause I think he was getting nervous too, but he was like, it's like, yeah, so let's do this. So then I had spoken to one in the very beginning, but then had decided not to go with her, not because I didn't like her, but just because I was unsure financially to do it. And we ended up, she actually made a post that she had spots in my like due date month. So I was like, oh, that one I had a consultation with is still available or she's got spots. So I quickly messaged her and then we met her. And when we had our, like, she came to our house and we had her prenatal appointment, we just like both loved her. We just clicked and she was so great during before the birth and like during and like after. So yeah, I was really glad. And I just want to give like a shout out to her. That's Dana Pollard and she has Evergreen Doula Services in Chilliwack. And she's also a VBAC mama herself. So she definitely kind of knew her stuff, very VBAC advocate type doula. I did Cairo. I was like watching pregnancy and postpartum TV on YouTube doing like breathing practices. My doula sent me all these breathing practices. I think I've seen it on here. I did a burning ceremony. So yeah, I wrote down all my fears and then yeah, I just like burned them in a pot. It felt very like, it felt like a release. So
it's so amazing. In fact, I will make sure to put that in the show notes, the link. So if anyone's interested, you can go check it out.
Okay, yeah, good. I'm like, have everything written here because I think everything I did played a role in it all going how it went. Like it was important to me. I was like marking down things as I remembered it in the last couple of weeks here. But yeah, so I did the burning ceremony. I did a session of Cairo just to make sure my hips were he said, I don't see any issues with your hips. And he did an adjustment and everything. And then I did, it was Christmas around that time because it was this like last year. So we made sure we had our tree up and, you know, I put fairy lights in my room, got my room like really, because I knew I wanted to labor at home as long as I could before going to the hospital. I don't think my midwife would have supported VBAC at home after two C-sections. I've never asked because I was kind of thought I was going to need help at the hospital. So I just decided I'll try in the hospital this time instead of trying for home birth, but I want to labor at home as long as possible. So I did get like fairy lights, got my room, like essential oils, like just made it very like a calming place. And so I got to my due date, was very calm, like no rush at this point. I felt pretty good throughout that pregnancy. And then, yeah, we went over 40 weeks as I expected. 41 weeks came, was still very calm. Like, yeah, I was using my ball, curb walking. I was fully expecting I'm going to go to 42 weeks. I actually thought I was going to need an induction. I kept bringing it up at appointments. Like, what happens if I need an induction? They said that they couldn't fit the thing last time, all that. And they're like, we will figure something out. And so, you know, but I honestly, I don't know. I just didn't expect to go into labor naturally because I'd never experienced it before. So, and my doula kept telling me, she's like, you're going to go into labor. Like no one stays pregnant forever. Like it's going to happen. And I just had this doubt still, but I did stay very relaxed and I was doing acupuncture too. I did acupuncture like once a week for maybe a month around kind of close to the due date and like just over it. I think that helped too. It was Christmas time, so like oxytocin, there was lots of distractions, so that also helped. Yeah, so then now getting into like the thick of it, 41 and 1, it was December 29th. I like woke up around 6 or 7 a.m. and I started to have like they felt like period cramps, but they were like they would come, they would go, started coming in waves. And I'm like, oh, is this something? Like, you know, I didn't want to get my hopes up, but like laid there for a little bit. And then I like texted, I like went and told my husband, like, I think that I'm starting to feel like something's going on. So I was like messaging with my sister-in-law and like my cousin. And they're like, oh, yeah, that sounds like it could be the start of it. And then they started to come in like a definite like pattern. And I'm like, okay. And then I went to the bathroom and I started like losing my mucus plug and nothing like that had happened up until that point. So I'm like, okay, like stuff is happening. Like my body's starting to do something. Yeah. Like at that point, my kids were here. We'd already planned to like have my mom come out from, you know, she lives about a few hours away and she was going to come and stay with the kids. So I'm kind of, you know, we're contacting people. My daughter's grandma is like down the road working. She works at someone who lives in here's house. And she, you know, I kind of got her in loop and she's like, oh, I'll come pick up, you know, both of them and get your son to your dad and all that stuff. So we're, you know, getting it all sort of figured out. I got in the bath at that point. My kids were still here and they came in and said goodbye. Like I remember getting really emotional because I knew that this was like happening, right? Like I was like, okay, this is going to happen. And, you know, this isn't the last time they're going to be, he's going to be the youngest and she's, you know, she'll still be the oldest, but it was like my little baby because he had been nursing up until a few months before that. So it was very like, just emotional. I hugged them. They left. Yeah. So I just relaxed and kind of like rode the, you know, early labor waves. I started tracking them on my app and was in contact with my doula. And like around 3 p.m., my husband called my doula and like, I think she, I don't know if it was like super intense at that point, but I was definitely getting more uncomfortable. And he put the phone up and she kind of decided, oh, I'll come. I'm going to come to you guys. So she got there, she set up, we started doing the mile circuit. I believe we started that when she got there. Matt went and got us like some food. And then the night became like a time warp. Like that's the best way I can describe, like that whole experience was a time warp. It almost felt like we went into another dimension where time stood still, but went really fast. Like it's, if you've been in labor, like you can understand what I'm talking about. Like Matt and I both talk about this sometimes. So it's just like another world. So like, mm-hmm.
labor land.
Yeah, labor land.
It has its own time clock too.
Yeah, it was like really surreal. Like it just, yeah. So we, you know, the night came, my doula's there. We're kind of just, you know, switching. She's getting me on the toilet, which was really intense. I was like surprised by how intense that felt. Like some women say it feels so good to be on the toilet, but I was just like, this is really like, it just felt like very intense. So, you know, at one point she also told my husband too, she's like, I think you need to go downstairs and take a nap and like, I'll be with her. And I remember being so mad. Like I was so tired at that point. I think the worst part of that night was the exhaustion. I was in pain, but I was also just like so tired that I just, and my doula is like, you know, let's get you, you know, doing this. And then the next mile circuit is like a lying down one where we, you know, put your legs. And when she told my husband he could go nap, I was just like, no, like he's not going for a nap. Like if I can't sleep, he doesn't get to sleep. Like I was just so, you know, anyways, so he goes and naps and like my doula is like kind of, you know, like I'm sort of sleeping and she's kind of like drifting, but like every time a contraction would happen, she'd like jolt up and like be attending to me. I can't even like remember. I think she was doing hip squeezes and different things, but around 3 a.m. they were like getting really, really intense. And she's like, let's get you in a tub. And the tub felt good earlier, but then when I got in it second time, I was like, this does not feel good. Like I was so uncomfortable. And at one point I was like, okay, I just need to get out. And I was getting panicky at that point because now it's like really happening. Like this is all getting very intense. Right. And I'm like starting to get just nervous. So I wanted to check on the baby and like, we put the Doppler on and everything was good. But yeah, I was like, I think I need to go to the hospital and stuff. And then when we started to get me out of the tub, the pain was so intense and I screaming and she's calling for my husband, like, you got to come and get her, come help me get her out. He comes in, he said later on, it was like, there was like some weird ritual going on. There's like candles and it's dark and she's like sitting there trying to get you out and you're just screaming. And it was very intense. And I thought, because it was so intense at that point, I'm like, this is transition. I'm at the end. Like, this has got to be the end. So then we decide to go to the hospital. My midwife comes in and she checks me. She doesn't tell me at that moment what I'm at, but she's like, okay, just get dressed and we'll talk. And I already knew like it was bad if she was like not telling me. And she's like, we're going to talk after you get dressed. So she, you know, she sits me down and she's like, I think I was leaning over the bed and she was like, leans in next to me. She's like, okay, so you're at a two. And I'm like, what? Like, I've been laboring for nearly 24 hours, like hard. It felt hard. And I'm at a two, like, that's it. And then she's like, I don't want you to like be disappointed. Like you're still making progress. Things are happening. Like, it's not all about dilation. Like, she's trying to explain this to me. And I'm like, I was just crying and just, you know, like kind of feeling like devastated. Right. And at that point, I'm just so exhausted. So they actually, you know, she did a shot of morphine to help me just like sleep a bit. So I slept in the hospital for a little bit, but I wasn't actually admitted. Like she hadn't admitted me yet because she was worried that like, as soon as she admits me, I'm going to be on the clock, right, with the hospital. So we did the morphine. I slept for a little bit, had a little bit of food. And then like my doula was like there and we started pumping. Like I took my pump and we were doing it on the toilet and she's like, I think a nurse saw me doing it and was like, you're not, like, she went and told my midwife. My midwife came and was like, yeah, you can't, because it's a VBAC, you can't be putting on the pump, even though she was okay with it. But she's like trying to like walk that line of the policy while also supporting me, right? Anyways, at that point, she's like, yeah, I don't want to admit you. I don't want you to lose this, what you're striving for, right? Like, I don't want you to, you know, I'm trying to help you. So maybe it's best if you go back home. And I'm like, at that point, my mom was like at my house with my kids. She brought them over there. And I'm like, I do not want to labor at home with the kids around. Like, I just want to be. So we agreed to go to a hotel close by because it was also like 45 minutes home. So we got a hotel like 5 minutes away. And right before I went to the hotel, we did like one more shot of morphine. And then I went to the hotel and just relaxed a little bit. And the contractions actually fizzled out quite a bit throughout that night. And I think because my body was probably so exhausted of just like, you know, contracting, I think it actually like did that on its own. Like, it's like, we're going to just, because I was getting one an hour throughout the night. Like, they just completely fizzled out. And yeah, I got some sleep. I tried to have a bath in the middle of the night, but that also the tub didn't like plug. So it was like draining. I'm like, this isn't even working. So I got up in the morning, and this at this point is like December 31st. So, you know, this has been 2 days, over 2 days of laboring
and laboring. Yeah.
Laboring. I'm just tired at this point, but where, you know, they did start to like pick up a little bit more at that point. So yeah, so they picked up a little bit more, and then we decided to like, we're in contact with our doula, and the doula had gone home at that point too, because she lived in that city. So she was not far from us, but you know, like we're all like, let's go take a break, right? Like nothing's happening tonight. So yeah, so that next day on the 31st, I was in contact with her, was in contact with the midwife, and we decided I'll go back to the hospital. So we go back to the hospital, and the midwife checks me again, and I'm like, maybe a three, like a three, and like, very stretchy, like she's describing it. She's like, you're making progress. I'm like, this feels like so, like, this is like, we're in the third day of this, and like, nothing, you know, is like, it just felt so like long, right? But, you know, I still was, and she's, and my midwife gave me the best talk. She just sat, like, she sat down, she's like, like, what gives you the most anxiety right now? And I'm like, going back to the hotel. Like, I do not want to go back for another night. Like, I want to be here and kind of like ready to like get things going, right? And so she's like, okay, so like, let's figure out how we're going to do this, right? And she's like, okay, so she talked to the OB, the one who I'd had the 30-week consult with. He was kind of overseeing her, I guess. So she said, I came back. She came back from talking to him. She's like, yeah, he gave me the go-ahead for, we can give you an epidural and we can break your water. And then I was kind of like, I've heard, you know, mixed things about that, like on the podcast and like in my own research. I was like, well, what, you know, what if they break my water? Doesn't that, can't that make things? You know, she tried to explain it, that it can, you've made enough progress that it might help stimulate things, blah, 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 all that. So anyways, she kind of convinced me. I felt confident. I get the epidural, and oh my gosh, so amazing, like immediately just relief and can relax. And so, yeah, I got the epidural and she broke my water, it was like things started to just pick up. So I had the effect of like, it sped things up. And I know like my sister-in-law had the same thing with her burst, like she couldn't seem to get past one or two, and then she has an epidural each time and she just like takes off, right? So I think I had the same thing. So yeah, like they checked me a little while later, I'm like at a seven. The doula had come back at that point. She's getting me in different positions with the peanut ball. We're getting close to New Year's. So yeah, we're kind of like, was it going to be a New Year's baby? Like around 11 p.m., I'm close to a 10. Baby's facing in a weird position. So she's like, I can go in and like rotate them, but it's going to be very like aggressive, or just like, yeah, it's going to be kind of intense, right? And I'm like, you know, I think she's hinting at, we can call it at this point. If you really want, we can go to a C-section. But I was like, well, we're already like this far, like do what you got to do. And so we cranked up my epidural. She did what she had to do. I didn't really feel it, maybe a bit of pressure, and it worked. And then she started to come down, and yeah, it was just like, finally, we're out of town. We're ready to push. The midwife came in. She had like a little party hat on because they were having a little New Year's Eve celebration. And then, yeah, I began pushing. I had like my music playing, like If I Didn't Love You by Jason Aldean was playing when she actually came out. And it was just, there was so much energy in the room. It was wild. Like my midwife and this really lovely female nurse and my doula and my husband, like it was just so much good, positive energy. And my midwife, I started pushing and I'm thinking, this is going to be like hours, like be prepared for it to be long. And it was like, after a few minutes, I was like, you're doing this. Like, it's going to happen. You're going to have this baby vaginally. Like it's like, you've had five babies vaginally. Like this baby's just coming down. It's coming. And I'm like, it's giving you so much momentum. Yeah. You're doing this, like it's happening. Right. So,
yeah.
I'm like, you know, it's 15 minutes and she's like, my husband could have caught her, but I think he's like worried, right? So then she pulls her out, she comes right out and she puts her on me, and I remember just like screaming, like, I did it, like so emotional, crying, all the feelings. She was a surprise gender baby. So my husband announced, well, he got wrong at first because she like swore. They're like, no, I think it's a girl. And like, he kind of wanted a girl, you know, and so it was like so emotional. Yeah. So like I had a third degree tear, and that was not that bad to recover from. The OB had to come in and assist stitching it up. And that's the one who told me he had no confidence I could deliver vaginally. So it felt pretty good. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, you did it. Yeah. So they stitched up my tear, and the, so and she was 9'1". She was 9 pounds, 1 ounce. So my second son was my biggest. He was 10'1". And my oldest was 8'11". So she was my middle sized baby. Mm-hmm. She latched right away, like nursed no problem, still nursing. We were home like the next day, or no, that same day, because it happened at 12:49. So she was the New Year's baby in our city. So we got to leave at like 2 or something of that same day, which was really nice compared to, you know, being in the hospital for 3 days. Yeah, we went home. They did a little article on us, which was cool. And I got to talk about the VBAC stuff. And so many people in there were like, this is so awesome.
Oh, cool.
It's so great. You know, the labor was a total of 65 hours. So it was a very long labor. Yeah, so there was it was a very good, easy recovery. I found it to be way easier. My tailbone was a bit sore because she was pushing on it, but I felt really good. I did some pelvic floor. I did a little bit of that, mm-hmm. just to make sure everything was good. And she's like, everything, it doesn't even look like you had a third degree tear. Like, it's, you know, it's all looking really good. Yeah, I had a great conversation with my midwife at the last appointment. Like, we were crying. And I was just like, you gave me so much confidence and, like, everything was informed consent. Like, you gave me all the information to like make a choice. Like, you were never pushing me one way or the other. Like, here's the information, here's the studies on it. You know, she was just so good. She just redeemed like my faith in like at least some of the medical, you know, first world, right? So the hospital I found was way better than my other hospital. So yeah, it was just such a good experience. I felt like I was healed so much in just that whole experience. I no longer have negative feelings about my other births. Like, I just feel very grateful that my body did it and I got to experience it that last time. And yeah, I just wanted to like put a like thank you to like this podcast, because there was so much information I got from it, and the stories truly just gave me so much comfort and just empowerment. And hearing your guys' voices, just like, it would just, I don't know, it just gave me this like nice, comfortable feeling when I would listen to them. And I went into birth like not feeling scared. And I think a lot of that was the prep, but also a lot of it was this podcast. So I just wanted to make sure that. So yeah, that's kind of it.
Thank you. Thank you for your kind words and sharing your story that, you know, will turn around and inspire someone on the flip side who is in your shoes and similar shoes like we all are, right? Preparing and unsure where to go. I mean, 65 hour long labor, that's a very long time to be contracting, but such an amazing reward. And oh my goodness, all I can think about when you're sharing the pushing story is, you know, we have serious, you know, feelings that, or suspicion that you have CPD and you should just schedule it. And then like you start pushing and they're like, it seems like you've had 5 kids, you're pushing so well, your baby's coming out just great 15 minutes later, you know. And it's just, it's so hard because so easily, it's so easy to be like, okay, and believe that. I mean, I talk to people today who have had babies years and years and years ago. And we, you know, we get talking about what I do, and I'm a little passionate to say the least. And they tell me these things and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I wish that I knew you back then so I could tell you something different. But they still to this day believe that. They're like, wait, you know, and I never want anyone to feel bad for making choices, because we make choices that were given based off the information that we had, right? So I did the same, but I'm like, yes, it could be different. It could be different. So I'm so glad that it was for you. I really appreciate you so much. And thank you again for sharing your stories.
Thank you so much for having me on. It was an honor.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.